from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, in our opening half-hour segment, we hear all about California legislation that would permit private nonprofit groups to run state parks. 70 of the state parks are presently on the verge of shutting down. Then at 9:30, we get reaction and analysis to the recent decision by the Obama administration to stop the Environmental Protection Agency from developing tougher air quality rules. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Can nonprofits save California state parks? Legislation was approved yesterday permitting private nonprofit groups to run state parks presently slated for closure. The decision had been made to shut down 70 of the state parks to reduce the state deficit. And in this opening Forum segment, we find out all about the legislation now on its way to Governor Jerry Brown to sign. Joining us is Assemblyman Jared Huffman, who authored Assembly Bill 42, which went through the Assembly, and the Senate bill was passed as well. He, of course, represents Marin and Sonoma County as a Democrat. Joins us by phone this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Glad to have you, and also glad to have Elizabeth Goldstein with us this morning, President of the California State Parks Foundation. Welcome, Elizabeth Goldstein.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. And, Assembly, let me begin with you. Well, at this point, looking rather good and promising, and I know there's a lot of hope about it. I'm wondering, though, about a statement that Leland Yee put out where he said, we're going to lose jobs as a result of this if it goes forward, and the last thing we should be doing is not protecting jobs.
Well, I think there's a reason that he was the only vote in that column on the bill. Nobody else sees it that way. This is a bill that's about saving jobs, and that's why just about everybody that has been affected or involved with this threat of park closures has been enthusiastically supporting it.
Well, we already had the ability to enter into agreements with concessionaires and local governments. What's different about this?
Well, we have the ability to do it with nonprofits if there is special legislation for each and every park where you propose to do it. And we've done that on two occasions. There are two park units that are run by nonprofits, but each of those required a special act of the legislature. So this gives the department pocket authority to go out and do it in up to 20 parks, and that's just a much broader authority. So this tool is going to get much broader application now.
The two parks we're talking about are Santa Barbara Presidio and the Marconi Conference Center. Yeah.
Well, Elizabeth could tell you the exact. Marconi is one of them, though.
Yeah, and the other one, Elizabeth, is Santa Barbara, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me go back to the just what we're talking about, say, in your district, Jared Huffman, before we have Elizabeth weigh in on this. What parks are actually at risk here of shutting down, and what would the difference be, say, in your district?
My district is ground zero, really, for park closures. So I have Tamales Bay, Samuel P. Taylor, China Camp, Olam Pali. Going into Sonoma County, we have Petaluma Adobe and Jack London. That's a lot of parks proposed for closure. And as you go further up into Northern California, my colleague Wes Chesbro, is just as affected as are several other colleagues along the North Coast. So we've got a lot of parks in our part of the state that are under threat.
But what does that mean? Does that mean people can't go to them anymore? Is it they're actually closed down?
Well, we've never done this before, Michael, and so parks officials are struggling to answer that question. In some cases, they think it means just sort of letting them go feral, and people would continue to come and go, and they would count on good human nature to take care of the parks. We know from what just happened in Minnesota when they tried something similar to that, that it doesn't work.
So your bill could save as many as a dozen parks. That's my understanding. Is that right?
Well, it could save as many as it could save potentially more than that, but this tool, operating agreements with nonprofits, can't be used in more than 20 park units. Now, whether that frees up resources to save other parks from closures, we'll have to see how it plays out.
Would we, Elizabeth Goldstein, run into the problem of having a kind of two-tier system in these 70 parks that are up for closure?
Well, we don't think so. The standards that have been set by other nonprofit organizations already operating parks are very high. And, you know, we anticipate the ability of many nonprofits to step up at a very high standard. But I think it's really important to put this in context here. These 70 park closures are the first time there's been a significant rollback in this state park system in its entire history. And I think that, what we're trying to do is to preserve that system so that ultimately government and public funding sources can step back in. Our primary minimum goal here is to protect the resources so that they can continue to be publicly accessible now and into the future. If these parks truly close, the potential for vandalism, advertent and inadvertent, for destruction of resources, both historic and natural, is very profound. And there's no chance, I think, that the financial burden that would be required to reopen these places if they truly shut down is going to be something that's going to be easy for the state to encounter. So maintaining them at some level through this closure period will really make a huge amount of difference in their longevity in the state park system.
But what Assemblyman Huffman referred to as a tool would require, would it not, a great deal of, well, not only a revenue stream, but operational details? You'd have to take care of security, staffing, maintenance of restrooms, all of that, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. There's no question this is a huge lift for many nonprofit organizations. But if you look around the state of California and you look at the number of land conservancies and historic sites that are already operated by nonprofit organizations outside the state park system, you will see a very hopeful picture of organizations that have been able to step up and take care of all those issues in very precious places that are not within the state park system. And so, you know, we really think that this is a tool for the department. It doesn't require the department to enter into agreements, and it doesn't require the nonprofits to enter into agreements. The question is whether there's mutual desirability in some of these parks to enter into agreements that will suit both the department and the nonprofit organization in terms of taking care of these places in the short term.
So if a nonprofit goes in for the short term, what's the state's role in operating the park? Is the state simply a kind of absent partner in this, or what?
Well, I hope not. I hope they're going to play a very active role in overseeing what happens in these parks. I think it's important to recognize that in the nonprofit-run state parks now, and also in the local government-run state parks now, there's a good deal of oversight. So the department is responsible for continuing to oversee the management of those places, and I assume that that will continue with any new agreements.
This is Elizabeth Goldstein, who is president of the California State Parks Foundation. Since this is a half-hour segment, let me give the number out now. I know there are many of you who have questions for our guests, Elizabeth Goldstein and Assemblyman Jared Huffman. And if you do, or if you'd like to join us in conversation with any of your comments or thoughts on this legislation that has passed now and only needs Governor Brown's signature, we welcome your involvement in the program. It's toll-free, and you can join us now at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. Again, we welcome your calls. And again, the telephone number to call is 866-733-6786. You can also send an email to us, forum@kqed.org, or you can also post a question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. Wondering also about, Assemblyman Huffman, if we could talk briefly about the privatization option, because that's been thrown into the mix ever since we saw that these parks, 70 parks, were going to be up for closure. Privatization is something that obviously you did not want to fall back on and do not want to fall back on?
Well, that's correct, Michael. We think that's a bridge too far. There certainly is a role for the private sector as partners in having a world-class state park system. We have private sector concessionaires now. We have wonderful contributions from private entities that are sustaining our park system in many cases, and people that are stepping up from the private sector now to try to work with parks officials and others to keep these parks open. But these are public assets. They need to remain kind of sacred, if you will, and also accessible. And that's why we thought that taking this step into the nonprofit partner, where you don't have that profit motive, is something that provides a better comfort level and is more compatible with our model of state parks.
Does it move the state out of the park system, though, to a great degree, potentially? I mean, is this a slippery slope if we're moving in this direction?
Well, I don't think this is something we want to do on the natural. I would love to see all of our parks staffed and operated and funded, you know, in the public model that we've had for the last century. But these are unprecedented times, and would I prefer a nonprofit operated park to a closed park? Absolutely.
And Elizabeth Goldstein, before we get our callers involved in this, Prop 21 went down to defeat. It was essentially to provide the parks with more revenue as a result of license tax. And I guess it must have been disheartening in many ways to have people vote that down, to have the citizens vote that down. Are you intending to maybe go for another proposition of that sort or something like that?
We certainly were disheartened at the loss of Prop 21, but we are optimistic that we will find a long-term tool that the public can support to sustain these parks. And that's really because of the broad commitment that the public has both to using these places as well as to loving these places. You know, there's a huge groundswell of concern that's rising up now as these park closures really begin to gear up, and we hope to take advantage of that awareness and engagement that is inevitably going to happen over the next couple of years to really find a long-term tool that will sustain this park system. This park system contains some of the most iconic landscapes and historic places in California, and to just let it go feral, as the Assembly member put it, is really wrong and undermines the state's commitment to its environment, to its landscape, and frankly, to many aspects of its economy, like tourism.
Pending the signature of Governor Jerry Brown, private nonprofit groups would be eligible, will be eligible, to operate state parks. That's under legislation that was approved by the California State Legislature on Monday. Jared Huffman with us, who authored the bill for the Assembly representing Marin and Sonoma counties, and Elizabeth Goldstein, president of the California State Parks Foundation, and your calls. And we go first to Carl down the peninsula. Hi, Carl.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to kind of clarify for myself how the nonprofits make money or support themselves by running parks. So they're collecting fees at the gate, and how do the fees get split up between the nonprofits and the state?
Assemblyman, can you break that down for us?
Yeah, Carl, thanks for the question. You know, we leave those details to parks officials to work out in operating agreements in each of the cases where this makes sense. In some cases, the gate revenue may be a huge part of how the nonprofit sustains themselves. In others, it may be outside fundraising. So the ability to partner with nonprofits does bring that additional advantage of their outside fundraising element that can help keep some parks open.
Let me thank the caller. Go ahead, Elizabeth Goldstein. Yes.
Yeah, let me just add one more point to Carl's question, which is that the legislation actually requires that all revenue that's raised in a particular park stays in that park. So whatever the divide here, that revenue, whatever is generated by the nonprofit organization from gate fees or any other kinds of revenues, is required to stay in that park.
And Doug is our next caller from Kenfield. Hi, Doug. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks, guys, for taking the time. I'd love to hear ways of someone who's outside of the state parks sort of arena or in the local government, how we can make a difference and how we can, you know, is it fundraising? Is it getting the word out, like, in order to further the cause?
Elizabeth Goldstein?
Sure. I think there's a very important thing that many people can do, every citizen, and it's really easy. The first thing is obviously to make use of your state park system, visit it, make sure that those attendance numbers stay up until these places start closing. The second thing is we welcome you expressing your concerns about this closure plan to the administration. This is something that ultimately has to be reversed, and it's important that we keep our voices high and engaged in this issue. There are many opportunities to donate. You can certainly donate to my organization. We'll be directing contributions to particular parks based on where people want their revenues to go, their donations to go.
You might as well give your information, Elizabeth.
Sure. We're at calparks.org, and we're already accepting donations of this kind, and we'll continue to do that and ensure that those donations that will actually help keep your park or multiple parks open in the system.
Let me thank Doug for the call. And here's a listener who writes, in the event state money becomes available in a better economy, is there a mechanism in the legislation to return a park operated by a nonprofit back to full state operation? Assemblyman?
Well, there's no reason that couldn't be in an operating agreement. I'd be a bit surprised to see it, but I suppose that our parks officials could put a reversion clause like that in these operating agreements. I think nonprofits are not going to want to see that. They're going to want the period of certainty so they can go out and make their plans and do their staffing and do their fundraising and make it all pencil out.
And I want to get more of your calls on here. Let's go, in fact, to Oakland. James, join us. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I camped recently up, I forget the name of the park, but it was in Northern California up by Boonville. Had a great time. I had not camped an overnight in California in quite some time, and we paid a fairly substantial fee. And I had a conversation with one of the park rangers, and he was telling me that that park was on the list of closures. And he was quite irate because he says, this park turns a profit. Says it turns a profit even when you consider allocating cost of regional supervision, etc. Now, I don't know if he was accurate, but I know that the group that I was camping with paid a fairly substantial fee. I think it was $30, $40, $50 a night. Nobody flinched at the fee. It was fairly inconsequential. I'm not sure I understand why these parks can't be run on a self-sustaining basis.
Elizabeth Colstein.
Absolutely. That's a good question, but unfortunately, I believe, one of my favorites. Not that I'm allowed to have any favorites, but there's no question that these parks are not self-sustainable. There are a number of parks in Southern California beaches that actually return net revenue to the state, but they're very few and far between. Almost all of them do not make enough revenue to sustain their operations, and certainly not even at the levels that they currently are or at the more ideal level that are really required to maintain this park system in the way that it deserves. If you were to raise user fees to get to the level of actually sustaining this park system entirely on those user fees, the fees would be astronomical and people would be unable to pay. Your camping fees would be very significantly higher and day use fees would be substantially 4 to 5 times higher than they are currently. So, you know, I appreciate the sentiment. I wish it were true, but the numbers just don't make it.
Let me thank the caller. And Assemblyman Huffman, here's a listener named Malcolm. This may be a bit of premature, but he says maybe it would be a good idea to define nonprofit in this case and explain how expenditures like management salaries would be structured.
Well, we don't quite go that far, but we do require that these be qualified nonprofits in compliance with California's Nonprofit Corporation Act and in good standing. We also have a number of accountability and oversight provisions, as Elizabeth was alluding to earlier. There's a biennial report to the legislature. There's an annual report to the department on how these things are going. And we're going to stay in touch and have hearings and oversight to make sure that this is working.
And again, Jared Huffman represents both Marin and Sonoma counties in the Assembly and authored AB 42. And we go next to San Jose. And Robert, you're on.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
One of the issues that comes up whenever you outsource governmental functions, such as what's being contemplated here, is the payment of prevailing wages. Usually when government functions outsource, it's a legal requirement to pay prevailing wages. But then that puts the nonprofit in a bit of a bind because you can't really, it becomes financially very difficult to make ends meet, to make a self-sustaining park system. So I was just wondering whether this was addressed in the legislation, whether the contemplation was that prevailing wages would be paid or not. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Assemblyman?
Sure. So it's a good question. Prevailing wages is kind of a concept that applies on public works projects, and to the extent that such projects and contracts for these projects would be part of a parks operation going forward, they would be subject to prevailing wage. But it doesn't apply to a lot of the other positions that would be part of the staffing cost.
And I thank the caller, and on we go to more of your calls. Mike in Palo Alto, join us.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a huge fan of the show. I just wonder, as a corporation, my partners and I have kids that love the parks. Could we, like, adopt a ranger or adopt a park, like you see adopt a highway, you know, and how can we see the budgets, you know, the amounts per park,
Elizabeth,
so that we can figure out pulling a team together to adopt it?
Yeah, Elizabeth Goldstein?
We would be delighted to work with you to do that. We do already have numbers in-house that the department's generated on approximately how much a park costs to maintain. There's a lot of provisos there, but I would be delighted to continue this conversation with you offline. I can Elizabeth Goldstein, and it's elizabeth@calparks.org.
Does that mean, again, we're moving toward privatization?
It means that if people want to get together and make donations to help keep a park open by adopting it, as the caller indicated, we welcome those options and would be delighted to explore them further. I think it's really important to remind everybody that this park system has been reliant on private donations for many, many, many decades. One might even argue its entire life. And so basically what we're talking about doing, which is the big change here, is directing private contributions towards maintenance and operations. Traditionally, they've funded programming and capital projects. So this is not a sea change except the direction that those donations may go. This is a park system that gets a lot of money every year that's privately raised.
Now let me thank the caller and go to more of your emails. Robert writes, wonder, Assemblyman, what you have to say to what he's putting forward here. He's saying, although the intention of private organizations to sustain the state parks during closures is laudable, it is worth examining the negative consequences. A radical right wing in our country wants to eliminate practically all government responsibility for education, right, retirement, health care, and parks, among other aspects of a civilized society. Having private groups step in to run parks fits in exactly with their goals. Well, is that not true necessarily for nonprofits, or are we talking about something that actually fits what the listener is writing?
Well, I mean, I probably shouldn't speak to the broader philosophical problem that's being posed, although I think I agree with it. In this case, though, what you're really talking about is triage to keep parks open that'll otherwise be closed. So if you want to put that into some left-wing, right-wing paradigm, you could say that the right-wing has been trying to starve the beast and shut down government. This is a tool that we can use to help prevent that from happening.
And what's next here, as far as the legislation, assuming the governor signs it?
Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Yeah. No, after you.
Well, I'll take a first shot at it.
Okay.
I think what's already begun to happen right now is from both the local perspective, nonprofits around the state have been taking a look at parks in their area that are slated for closure, or parks where they think they might be able to step in and help operate a park in a way that saves money to save another park somewhere from closure. And so we're hearing already, and I'm sure Elizabeth is too, from nonprofit organizations that are doing their due diligence to see if they have the capacity to step in and possibly apply for one of these agreements. At the same time, state parks officials are taking a look at all the different park units and where it might make the most sense to find a nonprofit partner. Those two have to come together in the months ahead, and we'll see if these agreements get in place.
Only seconds left. Elizabeth Goldstein.
Thank you for everybody that cares about parks. Now's the time for all of us to step up. We need to do this right, and we need to do it soon.
Thank you both. Elizabeth Goldstein, president of the California State Parks Foundation, Jared Huffman, California Assemblyman representing Marin and Sonoma. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.